This episode of Behind the Bots is brought to you by Fingertech Robotics, North America's top manufacturer of combat robotics parts. If you're interested in building your first combat robot, check out Fingertech's Viper Kit, which includes everything you need to build a fully functional, competitive Antweight. Fingertech also carries a complete line of wheels, hubs, motors, and other components if you want to build a bot from the ground up. Check them out online at www.fingertechrobotics.com.
From our living rooms, as we practice safe social distancing, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind BattleBots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And today on the podcast, our interview with BattleBots head referee, John Remar.
As always, we'll wrap up the show with this week's installment of Robots Around the World. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Behind the Bots for frequent updates, or you can check out our website at www.behindthebots.com. If you like what you hear, tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have 9 news items for you today. First up, BattleBots IQ is the subject of a new documentary released on YouTube this week called Bots High. As you recall, BattleBots IQ was a high school combat robotics competition run by BattleBots competitor Nolo Garcia, who's widely credited with launching the Florida bot building community through her makerspace, Starbot. Outside of Nolo Garcia, the documentary includes some familiar faces: high schoolers Will Bales and Alex Mattaway, who went on to build Hypershock, Mark DeWitz, who built Ice Wave, and a young Andrea Galately, who went on to build Witch Doctor. Bots High began screening online last year and won awards for Best Documentary at the Geek Film Festival and Independence Film Festival. We'll include a link to the film's YouTube page in this week's show notes. Kyle, I heard that you saw an early screening of this documentary.
So I'm not sure if I would call it an early screening. This is a watch party, right? Like, that's what we're seeing, is like this watch party for Bots High. Because Bots High is a movie from 2011, I think, is when it first came out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been around for a long time. I watched it last summer. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun. So basically, they follow around 3 teams in the Miami Bots IQ scene, and you get to see, you know, not all of the subjects of the documentary ended up being BattleBots competitors, but you get to see a lot of BattleBots competitors throughout the documentary. And one of the main characters in the whole thing is Will Bales, who shows up like a lot. And he's a lot of fun to watch in this. His like kind of young, scraggly adolescent self. And he, you know, personality-wise hasn't changed a whole lot as he's gotten older. But you also see the folks from Team Witch Doctor. You see Mark from Ice Wave in the documentary a lot. And then a whole bunch of, like, BattleBots veterans from back in the day are also there kind of coaching everybody along, helping everybody through it. It's a really cool documentary. I highly recommend it.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to see it this week. And I'm so curious. So, like, did Will Bales have the same confidence in high school as he has today? Or was that something that he's developed?
More confidence in high school, yes. Like, now he's kind of self-deprecating about his robots. And back then he was like, so I built something that's just going to destroy everything.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So yeah, that's cool. I'll get back to you next week about my thoughts, about this documentary.
Awesome.
In very wholesome news, and speaking of Andrea Galately, Scorpios captain Zach Lytle and weapons operator Diana Tarleson managed to wrangle a number of top BattleBots captains together to read B is for BattleBots, the new children's book from Andrea Galately. It's a must-watch watch. I smiled through the whole thing. Check it out on YouTube. Lindsay, what did you think when you saw this this video?
So first of all, I have to agree. I was smiling ear to ear the entire time. It was so cute. And you're so excited to see like who is going to be the next builder for the next letter, like who's going to show up next. And I have to say that I think Diana Tarleson takes the award for most well-acted letter.
Yes.
She really gave it her all.
Yeah. It's cool that you can see like their relationship kind of come through in the video. It's very cute. It looks like they have a lot of fun together.
Yeah. It was so sweet. And it makes me want to like go pick up the book. We already have a copy, but now I just want to like read it again. So heavy recommendation. If you don't already have the book, go get it. Cause it's so joyful. And I feel like I learned things, you know, there's some elements of how these components work that I don't always know. And, you know, it takes a kid's book to educate me.
Team Mobot Captain Craig Danby this week posted an extended build video of his latest 30-pound robot, La Machine. Last week, he teased drive footage of the La Machine-inspired bot, but this is our first real look inside the bot. It features a hinged design, which makes it easier to work on the bot's internals. The bot is an homage to La Machine, the championship bot that Greg Munson and Trey Roski competed with before launching BattleBots. Craig says he might bring La Machine to BattleBots 2020, at the very least to show Greg and Trey, and possibly to put it into the BattleBox as a mini bot.
That would be so cool.
This would be so cool. I cannot wait to see this like in person. It looks so zippy inside of Craig's garage. Has really good pushing power, and I just loved watching like beginning to end a build of a really iconic bot. I mean, it's clear that Craig loves this bot. This is like his love letter to his childhood obsession with combat robotics. Speaking of videos, the team behind Tantrum this week posted a video of their orange puncher bot completing a precision driving course after Beta Captain John Reed said he was skeptical that the bot's brushless motor controllers from Trampa were capable of fine movements at slow speeds. The team built an obstacle course using cans of baked beans, navigating the beans with ease. The team behind the mysterious and much anticipated new bot Hijinx this week posted our most complete look at the bot yet, a video test drive of the bot running treads instead of wheels. Hijinx teammate Maddie is spearheading the experiment, which looks pretty awesome. At the end of the video, the bot even flips over and continues to drive inverted, which seems very useful in the battle box. Still no word on what Hijinx looks like or its main weapon. The bot is being built by Scorpios alumni Orion Beach and Jen Herkenroder. Lindsay, your thoughts on this video?
Yes, I was so excited to see it. One, because it looks awesome, even in its current form. But I think one of the biggest bummers of the show being delayed is that it means we have to wait longer to see what Hijinx actually is. I feel like I, like three nights a week, I just stay up wondering like, what is this going to be? And I don't want to wait anymore. So Jen, if you want to private message me, I won't tell. Just kidding. But I was hoping that maybe there'd be like a glimmer of something in this video that would like give us a hint as to what this bot is actually going to be. And well, it's not there. It definitely, you know, it was cool to see, and it makes you want to see more for sure.
It piqued my interest. It was like, I was not expecting to see a tread bot. And like, it's can obviously drive all over a lawn. So like, it's got good traction and good speed and good, you know, like it's cool. It's fast. But I was surprised. It was like, I was not expecting that, but surprised in like a good way. Like I'm even more excited about seeing the final reveal.
I just want to add my bit of hopeful skepticism about this video to the conversation. I don't think this is anything close to what the final bot looks like. I think they're just testing the drivetrain, mainly because like the language is like, with all this time, our teammate Maddie is leading the effort to nix the wheels and add treads to the bot. Does that mean that the bot originally had wheels? Does that mean that the bot has a wheels option and a treads option? does that mean that, like, that means nothing? That's the thing about this team, is they release these awesome build videos and these awesome progress videos that tell us literally nothing about the bot.
You think that this might be misdirection?
I don't even think this might be misdirection. I think they just quickly threw together a drivetrain just so they could be like, hey, let's test the treads option on our bot. Or who knows? Maybe there is no treads option. Maybe the whole bot is treads, right? It's not an option. It's just what the bot's going to be. But this language is so vague. We know that the video or the drivetrain that we're seeing here is too small to really be a heavyweight robot. So, like, are they just testing the drivetrain? I don't know. All I know is I don't think that this is anything close to what the actual bot's going to be, because this team has been so secretive. Even when we've had people from other teams that, like, kind of have seen early renderings or early CAD of this thing come on our show, they're like, I'm not telling you what it is. It's too awesome. I can't ruin the secret. Like, when Aaron was on the show from Tantrum, he was like, nope, not telling you anything. Sorry.
The mystery. I can't take it anymore.
So I don't, like, I know we're all like, yay, we've seen a part of the bot. I don't think we have. I think we've seen, like, one drive option on the bot, and not even what the final look of that drive option is going to be.
That gets me even more hyped, though. Like,
they know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing it well. Hats off to them.
Do you think we're good enough friends with Jen that we could ask her to text us, like, maybe a rendering? Or I don't know. Do I even want to know? Like, I don't know. I kind of like that. I don't know.
Like, I think that Jen likes us. I think she enjoyed talking to us on the show. I think that we could talk to Jen, you know, if we wanted to, about, like, what kind of music she's into. I bet we could talk to Jen about, like, her family history and, like, some of her past relationships. I bet she would not tell us a darn thing about this robot.
I have an idea. Luke, we use your trick for getting job interviews, or, like, getting the job before an interview.
The pizza resume.
The pizza resume.
We send Jen a pizza with handwritten notes on top of it.
Just like a message that's like, do you like us? Y/N. And then she circles yes. And then somehow we get it to display another message magically that's like, cool, tell us about hijinks.
Smart.
And she's already so happy with pizza that she forgets where she is, she forgets time and space, and she just tells us everything.
I'm doing it. I think that's a great idea. This week we got our next installment of Hal Rucker's new video series, How to Build a Duck. In his latest video, he takes fans under the hood to take a look at Duck's electronics, including a 3D printed electronics pod, cable strain relief, heatsink, and VESC6 Mark III electronic speed controllers from Trampa. Duck is famous for its ability to take a beating in the battle box, largely due to Hal Rucker's absolute obsession with reliability and redundancy. Check out this video to see that design ethos on full display. Wisconsin-based Team Wyachi this week released three videos showing the horizontal disc and vertical spinner on their new bot, Fusion. The team says the two weapons will share a common battery, but otherwise be completely independent with their own motors and speed controllers. Both weapons have an estimated tip speed of 250 miles per hour. Kyle, I know that you were so excited about seeing this video. What were your thoughts on Fusion?
So that first spin-up video we saw was like the vertical drum.
Yep.
But it's not a drum anyway. I'm never gonna get over that. And it wasn't balanced yet, and they were literally like had just gotten it to the point where they could spin it, so they did, and you heard it like rattling, and like it even picked up like a spark off the floor because it hit a piece of grit. And that was scary, right? For the fact that it was spinning unbalanced and making weird noises. But also because the weapon was terrifying. Seeing the video where both of the weapons were fully spun up and yet the bot itself was just like perfectly stable while both those weapons were going presumably full blast. I'm not sure if that's full blast or if they were like giving us, you know, 60%, 70%, was terrifying. I mean, I think a lot of people slept on Hydra last year. And now I'm going to go ahead and say it. Don't sleep on Fusion. It's a bad idea. Wow. That bot's scary. Yeah. That bot's really scary.
I was curious, what percentage of that, of what we saw was the actual fire up speed?
Yeah.
I remember you just watching the video and it seemed like 8 or 9 seconds of just continual, like it's gradually building. And I was absolutely certain at several points that was going to be it. And it just kept ramping up faster and faster and faster and faster. But I'm curious to know what they could actually get that spin up speed down to.
I saw in the comments that was just, like you said, a gradual spin up just to show that it's working, but that the actual spin up time when they're like green light in the box is much faster. Mm-hmm. I think for me, my big unanswered question is, how does it drive? Like, how do you balance the physics of a drum that's not a drum and a disc at the same time? Like, do those fight against each other? Is this thing going to take off? Like, is it inherently less stable when it makes impacts? I don't know if we're going to see actual drive video with the weapons going at the same time. But that for me is like kind of my last unanswered question, because if this bot has nailed reliability and it's figured out the physics, this is going to be a really, really cool bot and a scary bot in 2020.
Presumably they're going to have time to drive, because that's where the physics are going to get weird, right? Is the driving around with this thing, and like, you've got to have great communication with your weapons operator as far as like spin up on the back weapon and on the front weapon. Sorry, on the drum and the tri-rotor blade or tri-blade rotor. Right. I can't get over the terminology, Wayachi. You guys got to figure that out. But yeah, that's going to be where it gets really dicey, right? Like, if they have time to practice with that physics and that driving and that communication, oh man, this thing's going to be so scary in the box. I mean, think about that. That's going to be awesome.
Just put it in the parking lot with Rotator. Totally safe.
On Saturday, Witch Doctor held the first in a series of live meet and greets with fans over video chat. The team quickly sold out tickets to the event, with proceeds going to the team and their makerspace in Miami. Witch Doctor says they'll organize future online events soon. And finally, Mad Catter / Warhawk team member Emmanuel Carrillo recently published plans to build a 150-gram version of Kraken on the 3D printing website Thingiverse. Kraken Captain Matt Spurk promoted the plans on the Kraken page this past week with a delightful little tongue twister. Should I attempt this tongue twister, or am I going to botch this horribly?
Do it.
Okay, I'm going to try it. When baby krakens fight, it's called a baby kraken battle. And if that battle happens in a kraken bottle, that's a kraken bottle baby kraken battle. If that kraken bottle battle breaks the kraken battle bottle, then you have a kraken kraken bottle baby kraken battle. If one kraken breaks the other kraken in the kraken battle bottle, then you have a kraken 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 bottle baby kraken battle. Boom! I got it on the
nailed
first
it.
Try.
Wow!
Nailed it. Practicing that before we started recording.
Would it be a lot cooler if I said I haven't? You're welcome, Matt. And that's it for this week's news.
After the break, our interview with BattleBots head referee John Remar.
This week on the podcast, we have a very special guest, BattleBots head referee John Remar. John has been involved with BattleBots since the late 1990s and has served as a referee for around 1,000 BattleBots fights and counting. Off the air, he works as an executive vice president and member of the board of directors at BattleBots, where he's been involved with sponsorships, licensing, merchandising, game development, streaming, and marketing the show. We're looking forward to getting into all of these topics, some of these topics, most of these topics in the next hour ahead. So welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We are so stoked. For us as fans of the show, we are like, I feel like when you're a fan, like you eventually get into a space where you just start to wonder like how the show gets made. So we cherish these moments where we get to talk to the people who help put on the show that we all love so much. So thank you very much for taking the time. I'd love to start just kind of like understanding where we are right now with the show and COVID-19. So, I mean, first off, how's everybody doing at BattleBots? You know, like I'm assuming most of you are working from home now.
Yeah, everybody's working from home. Everybody's doing well. I spoke to Trey yesterday. He's wrapped up in all kinds of projects around the house. Greg's doing well. Of course, I haven't talked to everybody involved in BattleBots, but I haven't heard any bad news, and everybody seems to be okay. Everybody's wondering the same question, which is, when is this thing going to come back? And it's a fluid situation. We don't know exactly when, but we're ready. We're absolutely ready.
Yeah, the last message that we got from Greg was that the show will come back when it's safe to come back. Because, you know, like you have hundreds of people in a really tightly confined area for 2 weeks. And if one person has a cold, 2 weeks later, everybody has a cold. And God forbid, worst case scenario, one person gets coronavirus and multiple people get infected by the end of the filming. And I know that there's a lot of talk about how to make sure that BattleBots 2020 is filmed in a really safe way. Can you share with us, you know, like some of those conversations that are happening? Like, are they talking about maybe making the pit area larger and spacing the tables like larger, maybe filming people with masks in the background, possibly not having the audience, you know, like I'm assuming all of those ideas are on the table.
Yeah, everything's on the table pretty much. You know, as I said, it's fluid. It's a fluid situation. So every week, the production team, along with the executive producers, sit down, they review the state of affairs with what's going on with the virus, how that affects us, what things we think we can do, what things we can't do. And then we develop contingency plans based around what we can and can't do. And the contingency ranges from, you know, a normal BattleBots all the way down to, you know, something very minimal with crew, with the number of people inside the building, no audience, and how that would all work and what that would look like.
Yeah, I imagine that similar conversations are happening with sports organizations all over the place, trying to figure out, you know, like, do sporting events just look different this year? You know, like by the fall when we have, you know, baseball and basketball, football come back, tennis come back, you know, like, are we going to be playing to empty stadiums? Like, can we do an online concert where we don't have a live audience? And like, does that make it weird, you know, or just by the fall, will everybody just expect, you know, of course there's no audience and that's okay. Like there's kind of, we can make up that kind of feeling of excitement in other ways, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, having an audience there's an energy that everybody feeds off of. And when I say everybody, of course, Chris, Kenny, I know the teams do. They feel the energy. And then up into a moment, into a point, they're focused on the fight. But as soon as they hear that audience again, I know it brings adrenaline back into them at the end of the fight. They stand up and cheer with the audience. They try to get them involved in the fight. Not having that aspect is certainly going to change certain things. And I know some of the teams, some of the drivers really, really depend on the audience and they feel like they do it for the audience. But is the audience necessary is the question. And I would say the audience is not necessary. It's certainly desirable. It's just production's job is to figure out how to make the show work. And I have complete faith that they will be able to do that. So what that will look like exactly, I don't know, but I'm kind of excited to see if we do go down that path, what it will look like, because it may bring something new to the show. And one of the things we hear a lot from our fans is shut up and fight. And maybe we'll just shut up and fight. Who knows?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited about 2020 as well, because we've seen so many people go back and fine tune so many things inside of their bots with the extra time. So 2020 could be the year where we see the highest quality bots we've ever seen. We're certainly going to see some really innovative designs with like Gloomweaver and with Chomp, with heavyweight Walker bots, and just lots of teams that are taking that extra time to like build more reliability into their bots. You know, like possibly filming it without an audience, not saying that that's like obviously something that is definitely going to happen, but you know, like if that was to happen and we were to see lots more reliability, I mean, I think it could be like a pretty interesting season of the show.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, I'm excited to see it. You know, you mentioned some of the bots. I try not to focus, and I purposely don't get involved in what's going on with the bots. As a referee, I don't want to develop a bias, whether it's subconsciously or not, towards a bot. So we ask for a description of the bots and the names of the teams, and I distribute it to my staff, the referees, so that we're familiar with who we're working with. But so I'm just as excited, if not more excited, because a lot of these bots, I have no idea what they're capable of doing. I don't know what their weapons are. I'm really excited to see, and sometimes I don't know what they're going to do until they get inside the arena. And I'm sometimes incredibly impressed.
That's so cool. That's really cool. Yeah, it's cool because like that's the experience of the audience and of the fan, you know, like the average fan, you know, a million people sit down to watch BattleBots like every week. And for them, like they have never seen this very angry looking orange bot or this, you know, green bot that comes out. And for them, like, you know, they're excited just the same, you know, and it's cool. It's like it's great to hear that, you know, you kind of have that same sense. This is actually a great segue. Like I'd love to kind of bring it all the way back to your very beginning with the sport, like back in 1999 in Long Beach. You know, can you take us back to that first event? How did you get involved with BattleBots in the beginning, and what do you remember about that first event?
Sure. I got a phone call from Trey saying that they were thinking about doing this robot competition and they were looking at Cal State Long Beach. I, at the time, owned a production company. I was doing commercials and infomercials, music videos, stuff like that. And I lived in Long Beach and my company was in Long Beach. And so he said, can you help me find a company? And I said, yeah, me. So he quickly started moving towards doing it with my production company, and along with my business partner, we were deep in the trenches. We really had no idea what robot combat even was. I didn't know what all was involved. I had no idea how complex of a show it was, but we were learning this as we were doing things like building the arena. And I can tell you, the pyramid at Cal State Long Beach had a floor at the time, they may still, I don't know, where you couldn't drive a forklift on it. And so we had to literally take each one of those pieces of the arena and push them across the floor on a cart. And we did it with a skeleton crew until like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So I think my first day of pre-production, I looked at my business partner and I was like, what did we get ourselves into here?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I was hooked from the moment that the team started rolling in and they were working on their bots. And, you know, even in those early years, there were some people that were doing some really cool things and some bots that had some amazing power. So it was a lot of fun. So it was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed it. I was hooked. And once the fight started and the noise and the power of the bots just going at each other, the destruction, parts flying against the glass, the sparks, the audience cheering. Anybody that I've ever brought to BattleBox that knew nothing about it, that wasn't even excited about it, left with an incredible appetite for wanting more.
Yeah, there's something really special about seeing it live that is difficult. Like, it's amazing, obviously, to watch on TV. There's so many fans of it on TV, but seeing it live, it's like, it's visceral. It feels really kind of like, I don't know, probably the closest thing to like gladiator combat, maybe. I don't know, of the modern age, you know?
Yeah. I when you're at any live event, especially a sporting event, there's just another element that you don't get from television. There's the people in the audience. There's the things that happen, you know, with the productions. You have the set transforms from a robot going out to a robot coming in, seeing the crew bots clean up, how the fans cheer and react. You get to see everything. You get to smell it when a bot catches on fire. You can smell the bot on fire. You can feel the rumble, you know, underneath your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. So you helped put on that first event. At what point did you transition into being a referee, and how did that work?
So back in the early days when I produced the first event, of consultants were hired that had done a lot of HBO Friday Night Fight stuff. And they were the ones that helped get the pay-per-view contract and then later the Comedy Central deal. So I still stayed to support Trey and Greg, who are close friends of mine and I've known since I was 12 years old. But Trey asked me if I would handle the referee and be the head referee. And I said, absolutely. That was something that I thought I could do really well at. It was an opportunity to be in front of the camera and do something that I had never done before. So it gave me a chance to experience the other side of camera in a way that very few people ever get to do.
Was it nerve-wracking kind of the first day as a referee? Do you remember, you know, some of your early matches being in charge of, you know, refereeing the rules, you know? Yeah.
Yes. Since it was a relatively new sport and I was there from the beginning, I was involved in helping form this thing. But we had rules. The rules weren't as clearly evolved as they are today. And so there was a lot of looking over Trey, who the owner of this thing, saying, what do we do here? And a lot of it came from him. So I learned a lot through actually both Trey and Mike over the years. And then they got to a point where they trusted me enough to let me do it on my own. And just for clarifications, when we got to TV, all of the fights were officiated by the referees. Sometimes there's question whether or not the producers are telling the referees how to referee. I can tell you this, if a producer ever did tell us or does ever tell us, we will always referee based on our interpretation of the rules. They do not dictate the way the fight goes.
Yeah. Do you, like, when you think back on those early years, you've got to see, now you've seen thousands of bots come and go in the battle box, you know, do you have favorites, you know, bots that appeared on the kind of maybe first run of the Comedy Central show that you really liked, you know, a bot that you were excited to see getting wheeled into the box?
Yeah, you know, when you've refereed over 1,000 fights, they all kind of blend together. And I tell you, I to this day still have a hard time remembering when a particular fight took place, whether or not a robot was from the early years or from the later years, whether they were from Comedy Central or CBS or Discovery, whether they were from ABC One. So you get the point. You know, I like sparks. I like to see bots get flipped up in the air. I like to see the unexpected. And so it was fun. I will never say that I have a favorite. That's something I work really hard to try to not develop a favorite, because yeah. I don't want, again, to be biased. I always enjoy a great fight. So whenever there's a fight, and I love fights that go the distance, that are exciting and action-packed, and you just don't know how they're going to end. Biohazard was always fun to watch him flip a bot up. Bronco was great because they can flip bots way up into the air. Satrakian's robots were always unique and interesting. Help me here. Are there any that that you remember from the early days? I'm sure I'm missing out.
I would say like probably Nightmare is like a pretty big one. You know,
yes. Yeah. Nightmare, Ronin was yep. one that was visually incredibly stunning.
Yeah.
Who is the family? The Tilford family. Their spinner bot was always fun.
Mauler.
Mauler, yes, Mauler was always fun. And they were a very colorful family, just they in sure general were. To watch.
So. Yeah. And so, like, I'd love to understand from your perspective, like, how you think the sport has changed over the last 20 years, you know? Do you think the builders have changed, or do you think the bots have changed? Like, where... Because, I mean, you've seen it all. Like, you know, you've seen the progression. Like, the sport today is very different, you know?
Right.
Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Very simply, I mean, it went from an amateur event to a professional robotic competition to the world's largest. And these guys take it very seriously now. They put a tremendous amount of time, energy, and money into it. The technology has improved tremendously. But I think more importantly, what's changed most is BattleBots was ahead of its time. And now time has caught up, where we have the technology. Battery technology has allowed us to be much more powerful, much stronger. The materials are more available. The ability to do something in your garage or in your home, it's just much easier to get these things done. You can have parts sourced based on a CAD design that you've made that you can send off to have somebody else make, and then deliver a couple replacement parts as well. So I would say BattleBots was ahead of its time, but time has changed and caught up so that BattleBots can really be what it is today. And who knows what it will be in the future. It's going to be something even more incredible than what we see today. And even next season, even this next season that we're about to see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most exciting thing about this sport, because you can see it changing year after year and getting better year after year. Like 2019 was the best season of BattleBots that there ever has been. This year is going to be the best season. Next year, I'm confident, it's going to be even better than 2020. It's really, really cool, because it's part tech, part engineering, part art, you know, like definitely like the spectacle and the show like is really great. That's great.
And project management. I mean, there's a lot of project management that needs to take place in order to make this concept a reality.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. This ties into my next couple of questions. You know, the original run of the show was from 2000 to 2002 in the Comedy Central era. And then there was like this missing 13-year hiatus before the show returned, you know, for the reboot, like the missing years of Jesus in the Bible, where they don't tell you that he opened a breakdancing studio on the Mediterranean. Can you tell us about those 13 years? Like, what were you up to? And did you stay in touch with Greg and Trey? And, you know, and what was it like? And what was your experience like when, you know, when the show came back?
Trey and I have been friends since we were 12 years old. We went to boarding school together. We went to college together. We've been really close friends. And because he is so close with Greg, I've known Greg too since I was a young kid. I've stayed in touch with them all my life, including those 13 years. And I went back and went back into commercial production. I also opened a franchise. In the background, I always knew that, that Trey and Greg were working behind the scenes to try to get BattleBots back on the air. Quite often, people would ask me, do you think he's going to do it? Do you think he's going to do it? A lot of people would say, there's no way he's going to be able to do it. And I kept saying, if anybody can do it, Trey can do it. He's just crazy enough to make it happen. And he did. And so there was a lot of talk over those 13 years of different ways that the show can be produced, different formats, changing the show dramatically, a lot of different studios and networks and people that were potentially going to be involved, some people that had options to it that let those options expire. But Trey never gave up during those 13 years, and I knew he was working behind the scenes. And there was a time I think it was really tough for him because people would always ask him, you know, what's going on with BattleBots? What's going on? And he didn't have anything new to say. And I can tell that it had started to take a toll on him, and it was really hurting him inside because he loves BattleBots so much, as we all do, but it's his baby, obviously, and he's put so much time and effort and money into it. So I stopped asking him, you know, what was going on with BattleBots, and I waited for him to kind of tell me as things started to happen. And I think we know the rest of the story up to this date.
So, like, one day out of the blue, then he, you know, he just kind of came, you know, shouting with his hands in the air, we're back.
Yeah, he called me and said, we got ABC. And I knew that they went to pitch ABC and stuff, but they had pitched a bunch of companies. And so, you know, your expectation is not that high. And so when he said, we're going to be on ABC, my thought was, that's fantastic. I can't believe we're going to be on ABC. We went from Comedy Central to ABC. That's amazing. I mean, who does that? Who gets canceled for 13 years and comes back? I mean, who gets canceled and comes back to begin with? It's just, it's a very rare thing. And so when he called me and said, we're going to be back on ABC, I was thrilled. I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. It really felt like, you know, the 13-year wait was all worth it at that point.
So for the past 5 years, you've been involved heavily with marketing, sponsorships, licensing, and merchandising for BattleBots. It honestly sounds like, you know, one of the coolest gigs on the planet. Could you, like, take us, you know, for a walk at a mile in your shoes and tell us a little bit what your side of your career is like?
Sure. Because I have such a strong relationship with Greg and Trey, they've given me a lot of latitude to look for opportunity for BattleBots and kind of create the position. And so a lot of what I do is I reach out to various types of organizations, to people, to companies, and I develop relationships to see how we can take BattleBots to the next level. When we came back to ABC, there was a lot that needed to take place. And one of the things that I had discovered was that ABC, they didn't have their PR department coming. They didn't really understand what BattleBots was. So I started reaching out and literally cold calling people and introducing myself and using LinkedIn to connect with them because things were happening so fast. I couldn't get in contact with people fast enough. So I had to find my own means. And before we knew it, we had Vex coming to the event. I had the person in charge of license and merchandising at ABC interested, but they weren't so excited. I begged and pleaded for them to come to the event, which they finally did. They had a great time. The head of PR was this lady who was, she said, I have to be honest with you, I'm just not that excited about BattleBots. It seems like a fun show, but it's just not my thing. I'm excited for the network. And I said, but you got to come to understand it. She came to the show. She had such a great time. She told me that she couldn't talk afterwards because she had lost her voice screaming so loud. wow. The head of merchandising, license and merchandising at ABC came, and she had a great time, but she still wasn't convinced that there was an opportunity. She said, John, we typically don't make toys for most of our TV shows, but certainly not after one season, and we haven't even gone to air yet. And the license and merchandising show was in May, and I believe we shot that ABC show, I want to say February, March. And I said, but just meet with us, meet with the Vex. We have a relationship with them. They're friends of ours. She said, I don't have time. Finally, she agreed to do it. They brought some prototypes. We sat down at a table next to the hot dog stand, and she spent maybe 15 minutes with them. The toy company walked away. She looked at us and she said, sounds like we should make some toys. And that's really how the toy business started, with this second version of BattleBots, the reboot of BattleBots. So I work on things like that and have done things like that. And then my position moved more towards sponsorship. And I spend most of my time now working on sponsorship. I'm talking to companies, trying to get them involved. I look for companies that have some relevance to what it is that we do. So there's not some disconnect. We don't like to have just any company and make it feel like we're spamming our audience with just some advertising. We like it to be relevant. And so I think we've done a pretty good job of working with the sponsors that fit that category. Mm-hmm. So I do work at home. I do travel from time to time, but I do have a lot of flexibility in what I do. And it really is a great opportunity and a dream job.
Can you go, a little bit more in depth about the different buckets of sponsorship? Like, I know, companies are able to directly sponsor a team. Companies are able to directly sponsor the show. And then, of course, people are able to advertise and sponsor through the network. Can you give us a little bit more detail on that?
Sure. First off, being involved with BattleBots offers a really unique opportunity. We're the largest co-viewed show on the network. We were the largest when we were on ABC, and I assume that if we had the data back in those days from Comedy Central, we would have probably been the largest co-viewed. And what I mean by co-viewed, it's families, kids and parents watching together. There are very few programs that bring an audience like that together, and BattleBots does just that. Plus, we're really the eyes and ears of the engineering world. We also have gamers involved, massive companies, Elon Musk, Amazon loves us. There's just so many companies out there that really enjoy BattleBots. So we bring that unique demo. And what we offer is an opportunity, though, for any type of company at any level of sponsorship to be involved. So whether you're a mom and pop or a major Fortune 500 company, you can be involved in BattleBots. And yeah, there are three buckets. So starting from the ground floor and working our way up, you can sponsor a team, and you can reach out to a team directly. You can talk to BattleBots corporate, and we will be glad to introduce you to any team you want. You can look at past teams, you can hear about the new teams, and you can decide what it is that you want to do with that team, and then strike a deal directly with that team. You can also be intertwined into the show with that team. You can step it up and also be involved in the show. You can have a marquee sponsorship. So underneath the driver's platform on the inside of the box where all the fun action takes place, you can have your company name and logo appear. You can sponsor on the website. We have all kinds of opportunities on our social media platforms. We can create custom campaigns, lead gen campaigns. We did a lead gen campaign with a company that built a replica trophy, the BattleBot Giant Nut, and they were able to generate leads by people entering a contest, and whoever won the contest got the replica nut. So there are a lot of things that we can do. We have corporate sponsorship opportunities where companies of any size can bring a group to the event and entertain. Of course, we'll have to reevaluate that as we learn more about the coronavirus situation. Mm-hmm. So the three buckets, again, you can sponsor a team, you can sponsor BattleBots, and the third one is you can buy commercial time with Discovery directly, or you can be involved in all three. And if you're interested in all three, just give us a call. If you're interested in working with a team, we'll be happy to put you in touch with any team that you want to be in touch with.
So I want to kind of jump into that bucket for a little bit and talk about the direct team sponsorships. So in your best guess, how much on average does it cost to sponsor a BattleBot?
That's a great question, and I wish I had more clarity on that. But I think the simplest way to answer that is it really depends on the team itself. You know, we get emails from time to time saying, I want to sponsor this bot or I want to sponsor that bot. And it's from a fan. And I don't know if that fan has $25, $5, or $500. So if they want to sponsor a team, I'm sure a team wouldn't turn down any amount of money just to help support that team. You know, the real question is, what does it cost to build a BattleBot? What does it cost to enter your BattleBot into the competition and keep that structure going? And it's not cheap. So the more sponsorship we could see go to the teams, the better for everybody, because the better the bots are going to be, the better the show's going to be, and the more people are going to watch it.
That makes perfect sense. So in that realm, like when you're directing sponsors to teams or helping connect sponsors to teams, are there certain companies that aren't allowed to be sponsors? I mean, I imagine sponsors need to be family friendly given how many kids watch the show. So like, what are kind of the limitations on that?
Yeah, correct. I mean, typically those that advertise on television already, the network advertisers, the big ones, are going to go through Discovery. Any sponsor that goes through BattleBots, whether it's BattleBots the show or BattleBot team sponsorship, needs to be approved by Discovery. They're the ones that own the rights to the show and broadcast it on their network. And so we have a relationship with them that's quite unique and unlike most television shows, where we can say, hey, we're not going to go after your sponsors or the sponsors that would traditionally advertise on a TV show. We're going to go after other sponsors. But those still, whether it's a team or whether it's a marquee inside the arena, we still get those all approved by Discovery.
That's interesting. Well, that makes perfect sense too. So a lot of teams go out and find their own sponsors. Sometimes the sponsors give the teams cash. Other times they give the teams free parts or parts at cost. But I understand sponsorships kind of go both ways. BattleBots sometimes will help a team find a sponsor, and other times teams will bring sponsors to the show themselves. What do the teams get out of bringing a sponsor to the show?
Yeah, that's a great question. The teams that bring a sponsor to the show will, we have an arrangement with the team. The team will be rewarded for that sponsorship. It's a great way for a team to actually offer something that maybe they couldn't offer on the team side, but still offer a company that they can then benefit from. So it really depends on the way that the deal is structured. The deals get structured in so many different ways. I can't cookie cutter that for you. And a lot of the sponsorship works that way. You know, just like you said, it's sometimes it's cash, sometimes it's parts, sometimes it's trade, it's exposure. So there are a lot of different variables at play.
Got it. Yeah, you do see a big variety of that. Like you see Max Amp sponsoring just a whole bunch of teams, and then you'll see a company like Mobot just really dig into one team and do a full like marquee sponsorship of them. So that makes sense. Every single relationship is different there. So correct. Do you have any tips for builders or possibly future builders? We have a lot of both of those that listen to this show, about how to talk to sponsors or maybe even how to like go out and find new sponsors.
Yes, I do. Sponsorship, raising money for a team requires a lot of time. And so it's something you shouldn't expect just to happen overnight. You have to build relationships. You have to knock on a lot of doors. There are a lot of great tools out there. LinkedIn is one that I use personally, and you don't even need to have the premium service on LinkedIn. You don't need to find some lead generation software to pay for, a good old spreadsheet, knocking on doors, using Google. Find out as much as you can about a company, see if they have somebody in charge of marketing, or try just go to the top and see if there's any excitement about BattleBots, if they know it. And I always find that if they know BattleBots, they're excited about BattleBots, then it gives you something to talk about and build the relationship a little bit before you dive in and say, hey, we need sponsorship. But most importantly, when you've got somebody on the line, don't be afraid to ask them. Don't wait for them. I see this all the time. Don't wait for them to say, yes, I will give you money. Yes, I will give you parts. Ask for what it is you want. Tell them what it is that they're going to get out of it. Have some sort of offering where it's not just a logo on my t-shirt. It's, I'm going to do trade shows for you. I'm going to come speak at corporate events. I'm going to bring my robot, you know, to this event. Be creative. You know, a lot of times companies are looking for content for Facebook, for Twitter, for YouTube, for their website. Be creative with how you can help the company generate content for their website. So yeah, there are a lot of great ideas out there. And look within the community. If you see somebody doing a good job, if you see a team that's raised a lot of money for sponsorship, or they've been able to get a lot of parts for their bot, call them up and say, how did you do that? Can you help me? Can you do an introduction for me? I do that all the time. I would much rather have somebody do an introduction. Don't be afraid to ask. Say, will you introduce me to this person? Will you tell them about your experience with BattleBots? Will you tell them about your experience with me personally? Put together a resume. Make sure that your LinkedIn profile is updated and you've included your accomplishments in the BattleBots world and in the engineering world and everything that relates.
I know that we on this show are really impressed when we see builders generating really cool content that involves their sponsors. And a lot of them have been doing that, especially during Corona times, I guess we're going to call it, because they have the time to, and they have the time to really generate some cool content. So before we get into listener questions, I want to ask you listener questions and questions about reffing. I want to ask you about the future of BattleBots. Where would you like to see the show develop? What does BattleBots in like 2030 look like in your mind?
BattleBots in 2030 looks like the most advanced use of technology in any television show. So not only are the robots the most advanced, but everything about the show, from the sponsors all the way to the equipment that we use, the arena that's been built, the weapons, everything is the most advanced, state-of-the-art use of technology, and we literally become the Super Bowl of robotic sports in that it's that big. And so massive companies that are in the technology engineering sector, which we know in 10, 20 years are going to be the biggest companies in the world like they are today, are going to be involved in BattleBots. And that's exactly how I see it. And there's a gamify component to it where we're delivering more information, more stats, more graphics. It's incredibly visual, even way beyond what it is today. Maybe there's an augmented reality version of it where you can actually see the BattleBots inside your own living room, or there's a huge game that you're involved in, and BattleBots has been taken out of the physical world and brought into the digital world. And then that digital world leads back to the physical world because you've proven it in the digital world.
Yes, I like all of these things. I love the idea of like putting on your augmented reality glasses and watching the show and having like the win-loss stats of the bot come up above their icon. And oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I just want to say that BattleBots with augmented reality sounds like simultaneously the coolest and also scariest thing I can possibly imagine in like the best way. So I hope that is a thing one day. But yeah, so we opened this up to Facebook to see if any of our listeners had questions, and we got a ton of questions for you about your job as a ref, what it's like being a ref, and all things related to that. So I want to dive into some of those. So yeah, fans of the show are really interested in getting to know about your work as a referee. So first off, would you just kind of set the scene for us? So what do the 2 weeks of filming look like for you? And do you see pretty much every fight as they happen?
The first 2 weeks are incredibly intense. They're long days, but they are the most exciting 2 weeks of my life. And it is like a roller coaster ride that lasts for 2 weeks. You wake up in the morning, you go to set, you get ready for the fights, you see the fights. I'm there for every single fight. At the end of the day, you go home and sleep and you start all over again the next day, and you do that pretty much for 2 weeks straight. Yeah, a lot of things happen in the middle, but yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. It's really one of the most exciting 2 weeks of my life.
Yeah. So that leads us to our first listener question, which comes from Hijinx Captain Jen Herkenroder, who asks, what makes a fight truly memorable for you?
Jen, what makes a fight truly rememberable for me is one that offers an unexpected element, something that I had never seen before, a complete turnaround. Maybe you think one bot is winning, and then all of a sudden, right towards the end of the fight, the other bot turns it on and somehow is able to finish off the other bot. But what I love most of all is anything that involves destruction. I really do. I love to see, and it breaks my heart at the same time, but it's so exciting to see one bot get destroyed by another bot.
Nelly the Elliebot tactician, Rara Granger, asks, as a neutral observer of most fights, what was your favorite moment of 2019?
Oh, of course, Sarah, it was meeting you. Of course.
So Sean wants to know about a specific fight from the first season of ABC between Complete Control and Ghost Raptor, asking, how mad were you at Derek Young when he used the net in that match?
Derek surprised us all, and we weren't expecting to see a net come out of that box, but as soon as we did, we knew we had to stop the fight, and we huddled and we discussed, and one of the things that we knew were in the rules is that everything needed to be approved prior to the fight in the safety inspection. And had we known that there was a net inside that box, we would not have approved that. I think they were disappointed, but I don't think they were surprised. I think Ghost Raptor was the one that was most frustrated, and they were like, ref, what's going on? That's an entanglement device. You can't allow an entanglement device. And we had to take a moment to process this because it was just so unexpected and something we hadn't expected to happen.
Now, I want to jump in because I have a lot of questions about this personally, but I'll limit myself. So in the upcoming season, you know, Chuck and the Ghost Raptor team has signed on, you know, as long as everything yes. stays the way that we think it's going to, they will be there, which is really exciting. Is there any talk about Derek having to recuse himself as one of the judges for his fights? I mean, is it like that level of animosity about that incident?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. If that is an issue, I'm sure it will get resolved. I don't know if that's even been discussed as an issue. And I know Derek is pretty focused on making sure that these judges follow the rules to the best of their interpretation. And they're constantly talking about their interpretation of the rules. And so I can't imagine Derek doing anything other than that.
No, yeah, Derek the BattleBots competitor is a lot different than Derek the judge, that's for certain.
That is true. It would make for great TV, but I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see, right?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So that actually leads in nicely to the next listener question from TJ, who wants to know, have you ever had to disqualify a bot for a rules infraction during a match?
You know, there's a pause here because I'm trying to think back, and I don't think ever, if the only time we've had to disqualify a bot is perhaps because the bot didn't work. They got into the arena and it just didn't work. But never for, and that is in the rules, but never for doing something egregious or violating the game rule, the play rules in any way. I can't think of a single time. There was some warnings that were given out. I was pushed once, not necessarily directly, but I think there was some frustration on the part of that team.
Yikes.
And the teams have yelled, teams have used language that probably wouldn't be appropriate for a family friendly show, but we have the magic of TV and we can cut all that stuff out. But no, I don't think in the history of BattleBots a team has ever been disqualified that I can think of.
I think that really goes to show. Yeah, I think that really goes to show the level of respect that the competitors have for the game and how it's played and wanting to respect that. So that's good to know.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The level of respect, I've never been around such a diverse group of people. And I mean diverse. They're diverse in terms of what they do for a living, how money land on the political spectrum, but when they get together inside that building for this show, everything gets put aside, and it's one team working together, sometimes to a fault. It's amazing that they're competing against each other, but ultimately they know they're there to make a great TV show, and I guess that's what engineers do, right? Is they try to engineer solutions to everything, no matter how big or small the problem is.
And I think that as viewers and you know, people in the audience, I think you can really feel that even if you don't know exactly how it's coming through, like you can feel that sense of community and that sense of camaraderie and uplifting each other, which I think, you know, really, really makes it special above and beyond how special it already is. But so Hunter asks, what was your favorite match to referee for?
Favorite match? Was, I believe it was Stinger the Killer Bee against Bronco. And Bronco kept Stinger, and Stinger's got these incredible flames. And every time Bronco would flip it, you'd see these just beautiful rings of flames spinning up in the air. And that was one of the most memorable fights. Just, it was amazing to me that Stinger just kept getting flipped over and flipped over and flipped higher. And finally, the only way that Bronco won was putting it outside the arena onto the other side of the spike strip. And had it not been for that, I think that fight would have gone all the way down to the end of the 3-minute clock. But that was one of the most memorable fights for me.
Wow. And after all the fights you've seen, that's a pretty big honor. So Paula asks, I love your enthusiasm and look forward every week to your hand stabbing and yelling. I wanted to know how you feel about the new referee who's equally as loud and entertaining. And when does the older ref plan to retire?
Well, I appreciate that was Paula, right?
That was Paula.
I appreciate the question and the feedback. I love my hand stabbing gesture. let's talk about referees retiring. There are no referees retiring that I know of anytime soon. However, we did bring in a new ref because we felt that we needed the backup and support. There were only two refs and we needed a third. Dave Sanfilippo was that third ref. I think you're being nice to me because is incredible, and is louder and has more enthusiasm than I do. And after watching this season, I'm going to have to step up my game because I want to be the loudest and most enthusiastic. No, I'm kidding. I just want to do the best job I possibly can and be the fairest ref I possibly can. And Dave does an incredible job. And I don't know if I answered that question. If I didn't, you want to repeat a portion of it, I'd be happy to dive back in there.
No, I think he just about covered it. Kevin wants to know, how much money does the champion earn for winning?
The champion splits that with me because we've made a prior agreement at the very beginning of the show. That's how he becomes the champion.
Oh my goodness, Reddit is going to freak out about that answer.
Yeah, and the way news works today, they're going to snip it so none of this other part will get played and we'll create amazing controversy. I love it. No. Honestly, I think it varies season to season, and sometimes you guys can answer that better than I can. Why don't you guys answer that question? What does the championship get? How does all that work?
I heard, and I've never asked Paul, I don't know, because I'm a polite person, but I've heard that the champion wins $20,000, but, you know, I don't know. I heard that from a non-champion builder.
You know, it that they don't do it for the prize, and this is such a team sport that a lot of times I think they share in the reward, but I'm not exactly sure season to season. That's an area I don't get involved in. I don't see the production budget down to the line item, so I don't know. We're not one of those shows that's about the $1 million prize for the winner at the end. Maybe someday we'll get there, but we're just not there yet.
I mean, I think it also kind of like reiterates how people are doing it for the love of the sport and the love of just like the community, and not so much because you're dangling like money in front of them. And I think that, you know, it adds another level of like respect or professionalism to it all.
This BattleBots is a great case study. Come together and they put down their differences and work for a greater cause. It's about love and respect of the sport and for each other. It is an amazing group of people that do that.
Yeah.
Definitely not about the money. If it was about the money, we wouldn't have a show.
That's true.
And being on the board, I can tell you that goes from Trey all the way. The people who work normal jobs because they aren't doing battle bots all throughout the year. For example, a lot of the crew bots, there's no battle bot arena set up year round for them to work. So some of them work back at the office, but most of them don't. They go back to their normal. But you know what they do to get the time off on the show is they take their vacation. That's their vacation time.
Yeah.
They're taking their paid vacation time to go work on the show. They're getting paid to do it, but that's the time that they're taking from their job. It's amazing. It's an amazing group of people.
And it's really remarkable. I can't really think of any other thing that people would willingly do that for, but Combat Robotics is so special. So we have two similar questions from listeners Cameron and Graham Grizzglover, the third, who asks, what has been one of the scariest moments while reffing a match during your career? And I would also like to know this answer. So that comes from three of us.
Sure. Well, I can't think of any one particular fight, but I can think of any fight that you see shrapnel flying and hitting the Lexan. And a lot of times you don't know where it's hitting. You just hear it and you feel the rattle and sensation of it. And I am very glad that the drivers are standing between me and the Lexan because I feel I've got another barrier. Nothing's getting through that Lexan, but even still, you jump, you duck, you go, wow. And you look at each other like, did that just happen? And, you know, and I wish, yeah, I'm going to have to start writing my memorable moments for these interviews, because I know there have been some. I know that the sound of the blade of Ice Wave is incredibly powerful, and that robot scares me every time it starts up, just by the sheer sound and power of that blade. Same with Tombstone, the speed and the velocity and the sound of Minotaur is incredible. And when you Minotaur has the amazing ability to not project a bot away from it, but to eat away at the bot and shoot parts all over the place. There was a fight last season where one of our studio lights in the ceiling inside the arena literally exploded, and you see just pieces of glass flying down. And I wouldn't say that was a scary moment. That was an exciting moment, but it reminds you just the random of where these parts go. But the nice thing about the people that design the box, nothing's getting outside of that. That thing is built solid all the way around.
Ooh, and that's a good thing too.
yes, it is.
A related question from Robot Ruckus organizer Lilith Specht wants to know, what does it take to make you flinch?
Lilith, it does. I have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they love standing behind a door or as I enter a room and scare the bejesus out of me. So apparently it doesn't take much. But when I'm at the box, something hits that Lexan, something hits that box wall, I jump. I mean, it's just a natural reaction. It's loud. You feel it. You don't feel it touch you, but you can feel the waves of energy come through it and almost penetrate your body, even though nothing's actually getting through. And so what amazes me is I'm jumping and the driver in front of me is just so focused. They don't flinch at all. However, there have been some that have ducked. And if they're getting scared, you know I'm getting scared.
Yeah.
I walk around the box before we shoot every session, and just for my own safety, just for my own comfort, and I can tell every time that they've done a great job making sure that that box is in the perfect shape for this fight. I'm very confident in that, but even still, when that piece of metal hits that Lexan, almost every time.
Yeah, I mean, we've been to a lot of like 3-pound events, and even those are terrifying. So to see like heavyweight spinners, oh my goodness, I can only imagine. But so now we have a bunch of silly questions from our listeners. The first of which comes from BattleBots co-creator Greg Munson, who wants to know, for some reason, still itchy?
Yeah. So in fairness, you told me about this question a little bit earlier. And to this, I still am back by what he means. I've texted him. He says that I know. He says, stay sharp, which if that means anything to you, it would certainly help me. Still itchy. All I can think of is maybe he gets too close to me and that gives me hives or something. I don't know what's making me itchy. I typically don't itch in general. But if you find this will be one of those things that we'll find out on Reddit. There'll be all these theories as to why the referee is itchy. And I have no
idea. You
know
Reddit has theories.
Yes.
So Scorpius weapons operator Diana Tarleson asks, is there such a thing as too much movement?
Diana, there is never, ever anything even close to too much movement. We love movement. Movement is great. Movement makes the show. I love it when I get to scream, show me movement. I'm not seeing movement. So movement is here to stay, and I think if we could see more movement, we would. And I hope to see more movement in this next season, and I think we will.
So we have a related question from Rarick Granger, who wants to know, If the word movement was made illegal tomorrow, what would replace your iconic phrase?
A hard one. Movement is so iconic. It's how do you replace movement? Show me some, I don't know, and maybe your listeners can comment in below some answers, and I'll certainly take a look at it, but let's not ban the word movement. Movement is great. Movement is here to stay. It's iconic. But here, let's see. Movement. Show me something. Can you wiggle your butt? Can you wiggle your butt? I like that. Wiggle your butt, would you? Wiggle it. Wiggle it.
I love it. I also love the idea of posing it to the listeners to come up with. Maybe that's something we'll do in a future post. So Blacksmith Captain Al Kindle asks a strange question. How does your previous experience as a guide in Tasmania assist your focus during a match?
Well, Al Kindle, it's really hard to understand any question that you ask me because I really have no clue what it is you're asking about. But if I were to really dive into that question, I would have to say it's really hard to focus whenever you're around because our love is so great for each other. I really do love Al. I love all the BattleBot folks. But Al and I have a great relationship. He pokes fun at me all the time. I poke fun at him. But I have no idea, Al, what the heck you're asking. No idea. You're going to have to message me and we'll get back to your fans on that.
I think that maybe Al and Greg like got together and decided like how to best troll you during this this interview by asking questions that don't make sense.
Did you perhaps brush up against some like poison lilac during your stint in the South Pacific?
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out. Itchy Tasmania? What? there's you know what? Let your listeners comment on that. If you think you know what the itchy thing is about or the Al Kindle question is, please let me know. Go ahead and write your answers below. And don't forget to like us and share this podcast.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So my favorite question of the night comes from Free Shipping Captain Gary Jin, who asks, why are you always yelling at me?
That's because you're not listening and following what I'm telling you to do. Flame off, Gary. Flame off, flame off, flame off. When I say flame off, turn that flame off. And don't turn your flame on even larger so it goes all the way up to the ceiling to burn our lights. I'm going to yell at you even more as much as I love you, Gary. Flame off.
That is incredible. All right, we have two final questions here, one of which comes from Nelly the Elliebot captain and Shuntcast co-host Sarah Mollian, who wants to know, how's the post-trauma from being on the Shuntcast going?
Yeah, you know, at first, when I first appeared on Shuntpost, I was a little worried because the memes, if you guys remember, some of the early movement memes were very morbid, you know, from people being dead, not showing any movement. I was really concerned where this was headed. Luckily, I figured out what the Shunposting was all about, and I had to have a very good sense of humor on it. And so it took a little while for that to wear off, but I love the Shunposting. Shunposting is great. Bring on the Shunposting. You know, whenever you wake up in the morning, the first thing people need to do is put on their thick skin suits because the world is not always a friendly place. But if you look for it, you'll find the humor in just about anything. And Shunposting is one of those places that has all kinds of humor. You just can't take it too seriously. And I think Sarah would agree. Thank you for the question, Sarah.
When the world is an unfriendly place, just make a meme out of it.
That's right.
And our final question comes from BattleBot superfan Mary Catherine Carr, who asks, are you in the market for an apprentice? Asking for a friend.
Well, Mary, That is an excellent question. And you're not the first person to ask that, but we often look for referees from time to time, and I think it would be great to have a female referee. I don't know much about you or what you're capable of, but anybody that's a super fan certainly is worthy of talking to. So I'd be happy to talk to you about that. No problem at all. Maybe you folks can hook me up. We can have a dialogue.
We could certainly do that. Thank you so much for talking with us, John. This has been such a dream and such a cool experience for all of us. We really, really appreciate your time, and we absolutely cannot wait to see you at BattleBots again soon.
Same here. I'm really looking forward to it. Everybody stay safe and be well, and we'll see you very soon, hopefully.
After the break, we'll return with this week's installment of Robots Around the World.
Welcome back from the break. Time for Robots Around the World. This week, we're highlighting Forpheus, the ping pong robot. Forpheus is another Japanese robot, this time brought to you by the company Omron. The latest version of Forpheus uses 5 cameras to track the ping pong ball and sophisticated servos capable of reliably returning top spins and backspins. After your match, Forpheus will tell you how you compare to champion table tennis players with tips on how to improve. That's pretty cool. Unfortunately, Forpheus is not for sale and remains an experimental robot for makers at Omron, which is a bummer because this sounds like a perfect COVID, you know, quarantine companion when you're bored and sitting at home. But that's pretty cool. What do you guys think?
I watched videos of this robot in action, and it looks so difficult to win against. This is their 5th version of the robot, and I think versions 1 through 4, relatively easy to defeat it. But this new bot, it looks really cool. It looks like a Terminator robot. Like, it's just gigantic and imposing, and it is really, really good. I would love to train, I guess, in table tennis with one of these things. I mean, like, that's probably the future, you know, like, you give one of these to a kid and just have them play a robot like for hours on end every day to become the, you know, a future Olympian or something, you know,
and to tire them out.
That's what I'm thinking as a parent. I'm like, that would be great. Oh man, such good naps.
A fun fact, my grandpa, when he was growing up in Romania, was actually a tabletop tennis champion.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, like, the specifics too much, but I know that he was, like, a local champion and, like, competed at a country level.
Lindsay, do you think the DNA still exists within you?
Yes. I have great coordination. I have great hand-eye coordination. You know, I have great skills.
Do you though?
No. I can barely get out of a chair without falling over. So I don't think that it runs in my DNA, but maybe it's like an untapped skill.
Have you tried getting out of a chair while holding a ping pong paddle?
Oh, now you're just talking crazy.
I once watched Lindsay step off a curb outside of a gas station, and in order, her feet got miscombobulated, and I watched her fall for over 4.5 minutes before she finally hit the ground.
Which is 4.5 minutes where you could have exited the car and tried to come.
I could have exited the car, gone in, got milk, filled up the tank, and come by to grab you before you still splashed out on the ground.
He had to go viral on TikTok with the video, Lindsay. You know how this is.
It's my dream to be a TikTok star, so I wish we had caught that on camera. But yeah, it felt like I was falling in slow-mo, and somehow there was nothing I could do to stop it. So probably not in my DNA to be a ping pong star, but you know, maybe if I had practiced a little, it would help my coordination across the board. I don't know. This is why I need Forpheus.
It's in that moment, I just realized that was a real story and not just Chris being silly. And I'm kind of just laughing really hard to myself over here.
Oh, it is 100% true. It happened at our local Stewart's in Port Ewan, which I have not been to now in months. So hopefully everybody there has forgotten all about it.
Stewart's, for those of you that don't know, is an awesome gas station / ice cream / root beer chain in the New York, New Jersey area.
It's the best ice cream in the area.
It is, actually, yeah.
Really strange.
I miss them.
Well, that's about it for us today. We'll be back in your feed next Wednesday with another mystery guest. We'll see you then, folks.
Bye.
Bye. Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.